KXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Traumatic brain injuries take the lives of more than 50,000 people every year. Nearly 2 million suffer from the injuries. We're going to talk about them today and a clinical trial taking place at the University of Cincinnati and nationally testing a medication to see if it can help. Then later in the hour, we'll hear about charter schools in Ohio. But first, joining me to talk about traumatic brain injuries are University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor of Surgery and Trauma Surgeon with UC Health, Dr. Bryce Robinson, and UC College of Medicine Assistant Professor of Emergency Medicine and UC Health Emergency Medicine Physician, Dr. Jason McMullen. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Hi, how are you?
I'd like to start out really just defining what a traumatic brain injury is, because I think people hear about brain trauma and concussions and all sorts of things. But maybe, Dr. Robinson, you can start and tell us, what is a traumatic brain injury?
I think when people use the word traumatic brain injury, it can really refer to a wide spectrum of injury. It can be as slight as a concussion at that Friday night football game to a significant injury that would require flying to the hospital and perhaps even surgery. Unfortunately, the precision of that term is not perfect, but it can encompass many, many sorts of injuries that we see on a daily basis.
Dr. McMullen?
No, absolutely. It's one where you get your bell rung to you're in a coma or could even die from it. It's that full range of injuries to the head. I mean, it's very specific. It is a traumatic brain injury, but getting more specific than that is pretty difficult.
So when you talk about it, this is an injury to the brain. The brain, you know, we're told is inside the skull there and it's pretty well protected. What does it take to really injure the brain?
Well, it can vary for different people. It all depends on kind of how sick you are and the force transferred to your head. And for people, it can be as falling off a chair and hitting your head on the floor to a significant car accident. It's really hard to predict what's going to cause an injury in one person versus an injury in another person. But I think it's important to understand that patients that do take medications for anticoagulation, atrial fibrillation, those sort of medications, those make patients very high risk for a brain injury because they have a higher risk of bleeding anywhere in their body, but more specifically in their head.
That's like heparin or something like that.
Coumadin, warfarin, those sort of medications, absolutely.
The way that one of my wisest mentors described it to me is, so imagine you get a beautiful snow globe and you put it inside a shoebox. You can drop a lot of things on that shoebox and it's okay. But if you slam it too hard, that snow globe is going to move inside the box and it's going to get broken. Same thing with the brain. The brain is protected by the skull, but it can move around a little bit inside. So if there's a hit that's hard enough, the skull moves, the skull stops, the brain keeps going just like you do in a car that comes to a sudden stop and you move forward and the brain can hit the inside of the skull and cause bruising and bleeding, which leads to injury that could be really, really mild or devastating.
Let's start out with the mild ones because I think a lot of people suffer from mild brain injury. You bump your head on something. I mean, is a simple bump on the head enough to cause any kind of serious injury?
I think it really depends on how that particular patient or person reacts to that injury. If they simply bump their head and they're not acting right to the people around them, or they're perhaps more sleepy, or they perhaps are seeing signs in their eyes, bright lights, those sort of things, I think you've taken a minor injury and now you've had to really kind of increase someone seeing that person at a physician. But again, it all depends on the kind of patient that you are. Those blood thinners can be dangerous medications, even for slight injuries. And I would tell our listeners that if you are on those medications, you have to be very careful.
Is that often the case why older people maybe are more at risk because they are more likely to be on those types of drugs?
Yeah, nope. And not only that, but, you know, as we age, you know, our muscles shrink, you know, we shrink, you know, we actually get shorter as we age. And naturally, the brain shrinks a little bit. So there's more room of the brain, that snow globe inside the box, so it can move around a lot more. And that can, the same fall and hit your head when you're 19 does nothing. When you're 90, it can cause some bleeding.
Let's talk about treatment and how you begin to even treat it. We're going to get into a discussion about a clinical study that you both are working with. But let's talk about treatment now in terms of what's available across the board for people who do suffer from some sort of brain injury. With a concussion, don't they usually just say wait?
Again, it all depends, but I think with a simple concussion, the first thing you want to do is be evaluated by somebody that can read the simple signs or the very minor signs of a more severe injury. If that particular patient's not getting better in a defined period of time, and I would tell you, if they're not getting better within 30 to an hour after an injury, that needs to be seen by a physician. It can be your family care physician. It can be an emergency physician, but that's somebody that needs to be seen. What we're, Jason and I, are really interested in is really moderate to severe brain injury, and it's hard to miss these. This is somebody that's not acting right, not following commands, not opening their eyes to someone hurting them or pinching them. These are very dramatic, severe injuries that we unfortunately see on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's very clear. So, you know, there's the difference in someone who gets knocked out and they wake up and they're doing okay. Those are the concussions. These are football players who are taken out of the game. And they're evaluated and they sit out for a week until they get to go back. What Bryce and I are really working on are that next level of severity and even the most severe where it is obvious. I mean, the person got hit and they're not waking up. They're not talking right. They're not acting right. You tell them to do something and they won't. Not even the most basic things like squeeze my hand or open your eyes.
So how do you begin to treat someone like that? What do you do?
So at University Hospital, one of the first things we're going to do, if you're a traumatically injured patient, you're going to be seen by one of us and our teams. Again, depending on the severity of injury, the number of patients that we see and who's going to come to that activation, as we call that. I think it's really important that a primary brain injury means that injured cells in your brain are injured and they're not going to get better. What we really focus on this day and age is called secondary injury, or somewhat those cells or that tissue around the primary brain injury that can go either way. Either they can continue to have injury or die, or maybe we can bring them back or prevent them from dying. And there's several things that we do on a daily basis.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a lot of fun because, you know, I work in the emergency department, but my love and my passion happens before the person even gets there. I work very closely with many of our area fire departments and our paramedics and with air care. And the treatment really starts way before they even get to the emergency department. So, you know, in the field, you're limited even more than we are in the emergency department or in the OR. And most of what we do is we try to prevent that secondary damage. We make sure that you have enough oxygen. We make sure that your blood pressure is enough. And we're looking to try to do even more because traumatic brain injury, especially these more severe ones, we truly believe that the faster I can treat you, the better your outcome is going to be.
That's no different than with a stroke or anything else. Then the sooner that you can get some treatment, the better off you're
going. No question. Trauma like stroke or myocardial infarction, those are all very time-sensitive diagnoses. And like a stroke or having a heart attack, the sooner that you see a physician, the sooner that care is instituted, that secondary injury, whether it's in your heart or in your head, is something that we're actively trying to prevent.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our number is 513-419-7100. You can email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. As we're talking about all of this, one of the things I do want to get to before we run out of time is your clinical study. And we'll start with you, Dr. Robinson. Tell us what it's all about and why it's different from some others.
Sure. So our particular study focuses on the secondary injury like we just talked about. Our hope is that we can give a medication called tranexamic acid, or called TXA, before the patient even arrives in the hospital. And we're hoping that this medication will specifically stop or stabilize the clot that may occur in your brain so that that second injury, that worsening of cell death in your mind, doesn't continue to progress. It has three different arms. The first arm is a placebo, so patients enrolled randomly into that arm will not receive the medication. The second arm, they receive a gram of TXA in our helicopter before the hospital, and they receive a gram while they're in the hospital. And then the third arm is actually they receive 2 grams before the hospital and a placebo while they're in our institution.
And the thing that's different about this particular clinical trial is that because of the patient's condition, they can't say, yeah, go for it, because they probably aren't conscious. So what can you do here?
Right. So like most listeners are aware, if you go to your doctor, you have high blood pressure, it says, Marianne, I'm sorry, we need some medication. I have this old tried and true medication. You got to take it twice a day. You're going to wake up in the middle of the night to go use the bathroom, but it's going to control your pressure. On the other hand, we're studying a new medication. You got to take it once a week. It's going to make you brighter and smarter and prettier and richer, we think. So we want to put you in this trial. You can go home, you can talk to your friends, your family, your priest, your another doctor, second opinion, come back and really give informed consent to participate. Well, now you just wrecked your ATV. You've been in a devastating car accident. You are, for all intents and purposes, in a coma on the side of the road. Your brain is hurt. We have to act now. I can't ask your permission. I don't know that this is going to happen up front. I don't have time, and you don't have time, for me to try to find your husband or your mom or your dad to ask their permission. So we need to act. These are things like traumatic brain injury and seizure and cardiac arrest. We need better treatments, because right now in the field, we have some therapies, but we don't have great therapies that can make you better, which is why we're studying this. So the FDA has set out regulations. They've been around for more than a decade, called exception from informed consent, that in these life-threatening conditions that we don't have current treatments for, time is of the essence, and we believe that it may benefit you. We can enroll you and treat you before we have the ability to get consent either from you or from your loved one.
And that's terribly unusual for the FDA to allow this. Is that not right?
Well, it is, but they recognize the need, right? So one of the earliest studies that we participated in here in Cincinnati was called the Public Access Defibrillator Trial, the PAD trial. So when's the last time you were in the airport?
June.
Okay. Did you see a big box on the wall that said AED?
Probably. Right. I don't know.
So they're there. They're in the stadiums or everywhere else. We know that it is safe and that you can help your person. An untrained bystander can apply an AED to a person in cardiac arrest, shock them in layman speak, and help save their lives before medical care even gets there. But we know that because we had to do research on people who had just died and they can't ask their permission. So we went through this process, and we are – I don't want you to get the impression that we are doing research without your consent. Oh, it's we're held to even higher standards than normal. Part of it, Bryce and I have been working for the last several months, going out and talking to every person in every format that we can to make sure that it's morally and ethically and socially acceptable that our communities agree traumatic brain injury is a problem. We probably should do this and study more. And people who have objections, we listen. And we take it in. And we have to get all that approval before we can even get started.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. You can also email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Nick's calling from Norwood. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. What's your question?
I was just curious if the study was still accepting new people. My brother is an IRAC veteran who suffers from TBI. I actually helped out with him with a study in New York at the Einstein Institute, I think, for TBI.
Well, that's great. Thank you for your excitement. This is a study that we're hoping to do in the next 60 days. Like Jason was alluding to, part of doing the study is getting permission from University of Cincinnati and the research board there, and that we have proven to the community that this is a safe medication and that we've talked to enough people that if they don't want to enroll in the study, that we are aware of them. For you, for your loved ones, this is a study that hopefully you won't be in, because that would mean that you have a traumatic brain injury that Jason and I feel like is severe enough to warrant the medication. So again, this is a study in traumatically injured patients, so we don't get to pick and choose who these particular patients are. If you meet criteria for our particular study, so you have to have a moderate to severe brain injury and you're in our helicopter, you might be randomized to one of our research arms.
Yeah, Nick, that's one of the most frequent questions we get when we go out and ask. There's lots of research going on for people who have already suffered a traumatic brain injury, and you certainly know the consequences that can have. This is we are looking for, and we will be treating people within 2 hours of their injury. So
that probably wouldn't work for your brother. Is he being treated now, Nick?
I'm not sure if he's receiving treatment right now. I know that he's been participating in being an advocate for TBI and trying to get additional people from the military who are suffering from that to kind of come forward and be a part of the conversation on that. So I'm not sure if he's in treatment right now.
So he's clearly still having some symptoms from his situation.
Yes, he is. Yes, from, I want to believe, about 8 or 10 years ago, where he was in an IED blast.
So that's a, you know, you bring onto a really important topic. This, the funding for the study comes from NIH, which is a National Institute of Health, but partial of the funding also is coming from the Canadian equivalent, as well as the Department of Defense, specifically the Army, because they are clearly aware that in the injured and people abroad, Afghanistan and Iraq, AEDs, blast injuries were a big part of what they saw. Traumatic brain injury was a big part of what they're treating, not only in theater, but as people return to the community at our local VA within our institution. So yes, the DOD, the Army is very interested in this problem, and that's why they're funding the study, so that at least they have something that they can have in hand for hopefully not the next conflict, but they do know, will it work and how will it work?
Thanks so much for your call, Nick. We appreciate it. Our phone number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment. You mentioned the VA. Do you folks work with the folks at the VA at all? Is it anything you do together or not?
The VA and the University of Cincinnati have a very special relationship, and oftentimes people have dual appointments at both institutions. I don't particularly, but people within my department and within my division have a very close connection. We have a very close connection to the United States Air Force. I'm sure Jason can talk about that. But being in Cincinnati and being part of UC Health, you can't be part of the VA. You can't be part of the Army, Air Force, Navy personnel. We're just, it's traumatic injury. It doesn't really matter where you get it or how you got it. We were just very interested in correcting that fact.
Yeah, and you know, I don't work at the VA. I'm a civilian. I have great respect for those who have served. Like Bryce said, we work very, very closely with the Air Force primarily in what we do, but we have collaborators within our group who are at the VA.
Again, our number, 513-419-7100. John's calling from over the Rhine. Hi, John.
Hello. How are you today?
Just fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking my call. In 2008, I was hit by a car and suffered a cerebral hematoma, and University of Cincinnati saved my life by performing brain surgery on me. And the Drake Center brought me back to life with treatment to teach me how to talk again and wake me all the way up. I just wanted to say, you had mentioned earlier, if the fellow who had suffered the brain injury was still seeing symptoms, it's a lifelong injury. You never come all the way back. Anyone that has a brain injury I've ever met has always had problems pretty much for the rest of their life. But I just wanted to say that how thankful I am to have such an institution in the city, and how quickly they were able to get me in there and get the surgery done and operate the way they needed to. Hopefully in the future, with this research on this different types of medication, people won't just have to sit around and wait for their heads to kind of swell back down, because it really sounds promising. So I just wanted to say thank you and glad to hear that this research is going on.
Well, we really appreciate it. Having a level one trauma center in our community that's dedicated to this injured patient population is truly a resource, and it does take a lot of resources from everybody, UC Health and beyond. You're right. Traumatic brain injury is a spectrum. It doesn't just go away the next day like a sunburn. It's something that you're going to have to live with for a very long time. Our primary outcome from this particular study is 6 months after the injury. So we're very much interested in not only what you do in the first 24 hours or the first 7 days or the first 28 days, but we're going to look at how you are doing at 6 months. And I think for most researchers in brain injury, that's an appropriate timeline, because knowing that this is a very long, drawn out process, that we really don't see the true consequences from injury until that time frame and even beyond.
Thanks so much for your call. Rick just emailed us from Union. He wants to know, how do you assign people to a control group?
That's a fantastic question. What we need to know when we're studying anything is, are you getting better because of the medicine that we're giving, or are you just getting better? Because there are some people, no matter how devastating the injury, their body just gets better on its own. When it comes down to assigning groups, it would be very unfair if I were a researcher and I said, I think you're probably going to get better. I think that your outcome's going to be good no matter what I do. So I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to put you in the study group. And this person who's not going to do good, I'm going to put them in the control group so I can stack my deck. Well, to keep us from doing that, it's called randomization, where Bryce doesn't know, I don't know what it is. When you're treated, literally, they open up a box with the medication in it, and you're giving it, and we follow you. And I may never know, and Bryce may never know exactly what it is. So we are blinded to it. So how are you assigned to the control group? It's done predisposed. It's going to be whatever box is on that helicopter that comes out to help you. And if there's an emergency, we can kind of peek behind the curtain and find out. But otherwise, we are blinded, so we get true, accurate, unbiased results.
With this clinical trial that you're working on right now, how long does it go on before you'll actually assess how it's working, whether the drug is helping?
Sure. So this is a trial they're anticipating to try to get 1,000 patients at 10 different sites throughout the United States. And these are high volume trauma centers, both here and in Canada. We're trying to aim for at least completing the enrollment phase, so actual patients receiving the drug within 1 year. But after that data is collected, it's going to take some time to analyze the clinical data. So that takes time with statistics and that sort of thing. But we're also drawing blood specimens to see how the drug is affecting people. And that's something that takes much longer, is because of all the laboratory testing that will occur. I would tell you, best get, and don't hold me to it, is probably about a year after the completion of the study, we hope to have a manuscript for the public so that we can talk about these results. People are very excited about this trial. It's something that we definitely want to get out there, like we talked to and alluded to beforehand. So no one's going to want to slow down this process.
We got an email from Prasad who says, can you discuss using, now this is kind of complicated here, using blood and CSF biomarkers to diagnose the use of a TBI therapeutic? Does that make sense to you?
That is a very awesome and intellectual question that I'm going to let expert Dr. Robinson
hot seat. So biomarkers, yeah, we're all trying to find the perfect biomarker or something that we can draw in your blood or urine to give us a sense or hint as what's coming down the road. This trial does not look for biomarkers of brain injury specifically. What it's going to look at is the interaction of TXA within the normal clotting cascade within your body. We think that TXA is going to help patients. We're not sure. But if we're going to really study this accurately, not only are we going to study that it helped patients, but how does it help them? What are the mechanics behind helping them? And so, unfortunately, I don't believe this is a biomarker study. If you have a great biomarker, give me a call. I'd love to talk to you about it. I'm sure UC Health would like to know that as well. But again, at this stage, this particular study, we're not going to be looking at biomarkers for injury.
Yeah, so what this kind of gets into, it kind of starts at the beginning of the conversation, is what is a traumatic brain injury? Because let's face it, we see plenty of people who on a Friday or Saturday night make a bad decision and they wreck their car and they're acting kind of goofy. They're not following commands and they get to the hospital and they look like a traumatic brain injury, but it turns out that they're just drunk, right? It would be nice to know up front as early as possible if there is an actual injury or not. So we're constantly looking for something in the blood, something, I mean, like when people check their blood sugars from a drop of blood on their finger, be nice if we could take a drop of blood and say you have a traumatic brain injury or you don't.
513-419-7100 is our number if you have a question or a comment. Jim's calling from Hamilton. Hi, Jim. Oh, I think I just disconnected Jim. I'm so sorry about that, Jim. I apologize. I believe he said he had had a problem with a brain injury for a number of years, for 41 years, and was still having symptoms on that. That's common, I assume?
It all depends on the patient and the injury and really what was done at the time of injury. I think it's really crucial when you talk about moderate to severe brain injury to understand what occurs within that first 30 minutes, that first hour, that first 2 hours is really crucial, because as cells die, they may not come back. And that brain injury may be something that lingers for many, many years. Our focus is really what we can do acutely within that first 2 or 3 hours and what medication we can give before the hospital and right when you get to the hospital. It doesn't really focus on those long-term side effects. Clearly, that's something the Department of Defense, United States Army, Air Force, and military is very, very interested in. It's just beyond the scope of our particular research.
And what we're really looking for is if we can stop that injury and minimize it at hour two, then perhaps the damage done by year 41 is very, very different.
So really, at this point, there's nothing that you can offer to somebody that's been suffering for that long a period of time.
I think that's something that, you know, he and his physician really need to talk about, because perhaps there is something they could work through those issues.
Thank you so much for that one. And Jim, again, I'm sorry I disconnected you. As you're working to finish things up here, and as you're going through with your research, are we better off now in treating traumatic brain injury than we were a decade ago?
I wish I could say, yeah, it's great. You know, it's going to be perfect. Unfortunately, not a lot is in our armamentarium to treat this problem. We have to prevent it worsening. We're hoping that at least this drug will give us the opportunity to prevent that. But even in 2014, there's very little that we can do to reverse the damage that's already done. I think what's really exciting is that both NIH and the Defense Department are really focusing dollars on this problem. And I think if we're patient and we do the hard work and we do our diligence, that more and more researchers, not only in Cincinnati, but outside of our area throughout the country, can really focus on this problem.
Are you seeing more of these types of injuries now than happened before? Is it just that we're more aware of them because of the focus on concussions?
I think it's a little bit of both. So especially in the concussion and the mild group, there is so much more awareness that we see more people coming in to get checked out. And I probably see more of those in the emergency department, because if it's just mild, and if it's only mild, so I mean that can be bad enough. Bryce may not necessarily be involved, and we see them and we take care of them in other ways. One of the other things that may be increasing it is as cars get safer, right? Folks are not dying from their other injuries earlier, so you have more of a chance of having a head injury. From my understanding in the military, as the body armor and the protection has gotten better, more soldiers are surviving the initial blast, the initial injury, and they're living long enough to have a brain injury, whereas before they wouldn't.
We call those diseases of survivorship that we're seeing just because things are getting safer.
Probably very similar to people as they live to be 90. They're seeing problems that they wouldn't have seen when people more often died at 70 or 75. What do you think the future holds? You talked about hoping that you can do some more testing and find some things out. I mean, is there a better way to protect yourself from a brain injury that you would advise people? I mean, you see so many people in the emergency room. What's your advice?
Well, the only way to mitigate or completely eliminate your risk of having a traumatic brain injury is not to live. I mean, honestly, because we all go out and we go for walks and we go upstairs and we have fun and we drive and we fly and we do everything else. So all of us are at risk. And I think that's one of the things that puts us, makes us so motivated to help, is that this is something that could affect me or you. And selfishly, I want to get the best possible care to maximize my chances of survival and improving.
I think as the next 10 to 20 years kind of evolve, I think we're going to see, again, more funding by federal agencies, local funding opportunities for researchers that are going to take things that are happening at the benchtop and really translate that to what's happening in our emergency department on a Friday night. I think it's something that we talked about, biomarkers. I think there's going to be a role. We just don't know. I think imaging for patients, real acute imaging and long-term imaging to understand what's going on in that particular patient's mind at that particular moment. I think that's going to be very exciting. But again, we don't have the magic bullet. We don't have the best operation to fix these sort of things. So there's still a lot of work that needs to be done.
Thank you both so much for being here today. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. It's quite an honor.
Thank you.
We've been talking about traumatic brain injuries. My guests have been University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor of Surgery and Trauma Surgeon with UC Health, Dr. Bryce Robinson, and UC College of Medicine Assistant Professor of Emergency Medicine and UC Health Emergency Medicine Physician, Dr. Jason McMullen. Tomorrow on Cincinnati Edition, we'll hear from former football player Ben Utek, who suffered a serious concussion. It took 8 months to recover, and he began having serious memory and behavioral problems. He walked away from the game. You'll hear that interview tomorrow at 1 on Cincinnati Edition. In a moment today, we'll hear about Ohio's charter schools.